Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast. How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Brad and Amy Williams? Y'all like Brad and Amy? Hitched for 14 years, Brad and Amy Williams call Central Arkansas home. A family of four going on five, they love writing and performing down-home country music. Brad can usually be seen as the front man of the Arkansas honky-tonk band, the Salty Dogs. For more Salty Dogs music, see iTunes or thesaltydogs.net. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to another edition of Tales from the South, where Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, both right here in North Little Rock, Arkansas. And I'm your host, Paula Morrell. On my left here, strumming his 1931 national resonator, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Mark has opened shows for everyone from late blues legends Big Jack Johnson to Little Milton Campbell. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? Y'all like our set? Each show we feature an artist, and so tonight's featured artist is Little Rock painter Marty Smith, and our featured piece is this painting right behind me. This one here, which is entitled Empty Street, which is for sale. Our listeners can find out more about this piece and Marty at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling? Tonight is our 2013 spring season finale, and our stories all involve situations that make our writers think, well, that was embarrassing. All stories are true and told by the Southerners who live them. Later tonight, Charles Field realizes a little too late that he has made a drastic error, and will end the night with Keith Claimer as he tries to win love, but instead ends up in a very compromising position. But let's start the night with Owen Ron on a hot day where he is schooled by a very unlikely source in The Big Drought.
It got so hot and dry last year, leaves started to change color and fall from their trees before the 4th of July. I remember the smell of autumn under a blood-red moon. The spring behind my house never went dry, but it got real slow. Usually there's so much water coming out of the spring, it forms a little branch that'll flow on top of the ground for a while, following the rut of an old logging road. I've got gravity feed to the kitchen and to the garden. From the garden, a hose runs down across the yard to the other side of the sauna, where the line empties into a big metal stock tank that serves as my kiddie pool. I love my kiddie pool. There, the water trickles over the side of the tank and forms another small branch that flows into the woods for about 50 feet or so before sinking into the ground. When the drought got bad, I could only have water running to one place at a time. And up at the spring, all the water there went down the pipe to my homestead. I started watering the garden, what was left of it, by hand, and most of the time left open the line running to the kiddie pool so it would stay clean and fresh. Did I mention how much I love my kiddie pool? When I needed water to the house for washing dishes or whatnot, I would turn off the valve feeding the kiddie pool so as water would flow in the kitchen. I was getting by all right, but the summer just got hotter and drier. One day, about the middle of August, I was sitting on my rocking chair on the porch, just resting, trying not to think of anything so the time would feel longer before I went back to whatever work I was resting from. It wasn't even noon yet. It was hot and the air was still, and I was sweating a bit. A damp kind of background sweat that'll turn into a dripping sweat under the slightest bit of exertion. There were some deer, maybe three or four does, and a couple of yearlings in the woods on the hillside across the yard. I don't keep a gun or a dog, and the deer come around my place a lot. Usually, they just pass through, eating some of this and some of that, and then move on. But these deer weren't going anywhere. They appeared to be suffering from the heat, same as I was, and not very interested in anything at all. They were just milling about, almost like they were waiting for something. Well, I don't pay them much mind because I'm trying to make the time go slow when I notice something out of the corner of my eye. I turn my head just a little bit to look over my right shoulder, then stop stone still like a statue. Not 12 feet away from me, standing alongside the garden fence, just as bold as can be, was the biggest stag deer I've ever seen. I mean, this dude was the size of a small cow. He had a rack of horns on his head, almost 3 feet across. I didn't count all the points, but they looked to be sharp and there for a reason. And this big old stag deer was looking right at me. I don't mean he was watching me. I mean he was looking at me. The way a cop looks at you. The way my sixth grade principal looked at me when he caught me in the hall just about ready to do something I'm still too embarrassed to write about. A look so hard, it needs no talking. This deer was making eye contact with me. And once he had my attention, he held it firmly, like he was waiting for me to realize what I had been doing wrong. But I was just sitting on the porch. Now, I will admit that on occasion, and sometimes for what I consider good reason, I have been verbally abusive towards the deer. But right then I hadn't been doing anything and I was scared. I didn't know what was going on. If he jumped on the porch, could I fend him off with the rocking chair? Would I be quick enough to get in the house? If I tried to make it to the car, I'm sure he'd nail me before I even got halfway. All this went through my mind as I sat motionless while this giant stag deer stared me down like he had a message for me and none of my puny Homo sapien thoughts mattered. The stag held my stare long enough for me to realize that I had nothing and that he held all the cards. Then he turned around and walked away, real slow and relaxed, like a Rasta, and like he knew I couldn't help but watch him go, him being so majestic and all. Slowly, he walked away from me across the yard. Before the sauna, he turned to the right and walked towards the woods, stepping between the shed and the sauna. There he stopped for a moment, standing in profile to me, and lowered his head, touching his nose to the ground. Not browsing or sniffing, just touching the ground with his nose. Then he raised his head, walked into the woods, and was gone. For a while, I kept staring at the place he had been. The empty place he had left there felt like the empty place that had been made in my mind. I guess I'm not much different from other white American males in convincing myself that most of the time I've got just about everything covered. But here, something big had happened, and I felt like I didn't understand a damn thing. Stupefied is the word, I think. Slowly, my mind started working, trying to put the pieces together. A big deer had stared at me. He walked away. He stopped and touched the ground. He left. Then, it wasn't like the clouds lifted or trumpets sounded, but more like things just fell into place. Where the stag had touched the ground was where the shutoff valve to the kiddie pool is. After washing the dishes last night, had I forgotten to turn the water back on to the kiddie pool? I had. And since then, there hadn't been any water flowing in this part of the hollow. Just the nasty gray water from my kitchen that nobody likes to drink except maybe the armadillos. I went down and opened the valve to the kiddie pool, then walked back to the house with my head down so I wouldn't have to look at the does. I went in the house, shut the door behind me, and didn't go outside for a long time.
Owen Ron lives in rural Stone County, Arkansas, and earns his living making chairs and white oak baskets. He has written several magazine articles about woodworking, four plays, and many humorous stories about his life in the woods. Next, Charles Field's day starts out innocent enough, but then he unwillingly slides down the slippery slope of criminal behavior, and the cover-up begins in Grand Theft Auto.
For people under a certain age, Grand Theft Auto brings to mind a video game, although this person over a certain age is probably showing his ignorance. For all I know, that may well now be considered vintage digital. But to me, Grand Theft Auto will always be the term for my very brief career in 1974 as a successful car thief. I was in med school working for a professor in his lab as a summer job. The summer job required whacking guinea pigs over the head with a steel bar in the name of science. That's not something I'm proud of, and I dread a heaven populated with guinea pigs. But that's another story for another day. The professor and his wife were both originally from Germany and planned an extended visit home with their children over the summer. He asked me to house sit his beautiful home in Pleasant Valley. Pleasant Valley. Not my rent house by the med center with no air conditioning where the goldfish froze to death one winter. Pleasant Valley. And he wanted me to use his car so the daily routine of coming and going would look normal. His graduate student Tom drove the family to the airport in their car. He lived right by the med center. I had a car key, so I was to pick up the car at his house. So I did. The car was on the street, not in the driveway, as Tom had said, but he wasn't much for details outside the lab. I hopped in, tooled out to Pleasant Valley, cranked the house's air conditioning up as low as it would go, and settled in for a great month. A few days later, Tom called me. "When are you going to come get the car?" I said, "I have the car." Tom said, "I'm looking at the car." I looked out my beautiful Pleasant Valley window and said, "No, I'm looking at the car." Tom said, "I'm looking at a white Chevy Impala in my driveway, four-door." I said, "I'm looking at a white Chevy Impala, four-door, in my driveway." Well, at the time, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette published a weekly list of stolen cars with their license numbers and descriptions. That next morning, my car was in the paper. I call my legal counsel, a law student buddy who's now a circuit judge and has been sworn to med student client, law student double secret privilege all these years. He was clerking at a big law firm and used their connections to get the police report. The four-door Chevrolet Impala lived two doors down from Tom, the graduate student's house. Great. I'd accidentally, not on purpose, stolen a car. It turns out in those days, I now know, Chevrolet only made 10 different lock and key sets, and after a few years of wear, they were often interchangeable. And on just my lucky day, they interchanged. Okay, so what do you do with a stolen car? You're in med school, staying in your professor's house, you're really not wanting to go to jail, and you really, really want to not have a criminal record and get a medical license someday pretty soon. And the one guy that can vouch for you is somewhere in Germany for a month. So, quick, how to ditch a stolen vehicle. My law student judge friend suggested either sinking it in a gravel pit, more dramatic, or more risky, park it around the corner from the owner and casually walking away. After, of course, wiping it down for fingerprints. Of course. He thoughtfully even tracked down the owner's phone number through the law firm. My conscience and Methodist upbringing made me want to confess and apologize. But if you do, anything that's wrong with that car becomes your fault, and they'll want you to fix it and pay for it, was my not-an-attorney law student friend's legal opinion. So my crime spree ended ignominiously, not with a bang, but with a whimper. I drove the car very slowly, very carefully, parked it around the corner from the owner in plain sight of the med center, carefully wiped everything for fingerprints, I guess, and got out. I walked like a man trying to look casual, and being conspicuously uncasual, went to the lab. I call the number. Hello? Your car's parked around the corner and I'm really sorry. Click. Now, I've never checked the statute of limitations in Arkansas for Grand Theft Auto, but y'all look like a group of honest, trustworthy folks. And I think my secret is safe with y'all.
Charles Field is a local product. He is a pediatric faculty member at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences and Arkansas Children's Hospital. He lives with his wife, Chris, from Glasgow, Scotland, and has two adult offspring and a variable number of dogs. In our final story of the night, Keith Klamer's need to impress outweighs his good judgment, and the results are a bit awkward in Without Sedation, a Love Story.
Just relax, the pretty young nurse said in a slow, sexy southern drawl. If you tighten up, it just makes it worse. Now, there are just some things in life that you can't do on a willful, conscious level. Like, forget a past love, fall asleep, or relax while a cable with a TV camera at the end is inserted up your backside without the benefit of sedation. Relax? Who could relax at a moment like that? And was that banjo music coming in over the speaker system? It was my own fault, of course. I had just moved to Little Rock from up north and didn't really know anybody yet. All I knew was that everybody seemed to worship a feral pig, there were no salt trucks in the entire state, and every spring all the cars were covered by a mysterious green slime that was right out of a sci-fi movie. At least I didn't know anybody well enough to make them endure 3 hours in a waiting room watching Good Morning, Y'all while I underwent a colonoscopy. just so they could drive me home. But the doctor had been clear, no driver, no sedative. There was another reason I had agreed to try the procedure on a clean and sober basis. The nurse, who had now apparently become my dominatrix. She was young and pretty, of course, all wavy auburn hair and bewitching green eyes, which had sparkled like fire when I scheduled my visit and explained my dilemma. "Aw, folks do it all the time without sedation," she had purred and smiled. "You look like you can take it." I agreed with her, of course. But looking back on it, maybe she had been insulting me. After all, a man who can take it in that fashion might be a draft pick for the other team. But at the time, I just wanted to appear tough. The other hurdle I had to overcome in my quest to impress, getting the assent of the kindly old doctor himself. As I gazed at him over his big desk in his wood-paneled office, I realized he looked old enough to have performed a colonoscopy on General Douglas MacArthur, who was born in Little Rock, by the way. Maybe the doctor wasn't as sharp, ow, as he used to be. His senility was not a pleasant thought. My malpractice fears were not allayed when I shook his hand. Unfortunately, after I quit shaking, he didn't. There was a visible tremor in his hand as he withdrew it. Well, that was 3 days ago. Now the big day had finally arrived. As I checked in, I noticed that Nurse Green Eyes was not at her front desk. I was informed that she was assisting the doctor that day, and I could see her inside. Oh, that was not good. I hadn't actually wanted her to witness my colonoscopy. I had just wanted her to be impressed that I didn't need sedation to undergo one. Too late. She was suddenly standing over me as I sat on the gurney in one of the medical bays. She was in full surgical regalia with mask and gown covered in tiny Hello Kitty logos. "You're the one who's not getting any sedation, right?" she asked in her sweetest Steel Magnolias voice. "There's still time to change your mind, you know." "Back out? You mean wimp out? Right in front of her? Not on your life. Or considering the condition of the doctor's hands, not on my life." I was wheeled into an examination room, glowing eerily by the light of a high-def color TV screen, prominently displayed on a movable stand. Dr. Shaky was already seated at the controls of what looked like a Wii controller and a smaller TV monitor. On the periphery of my vision was what appeared to be a plumbing snake. Before I knew it, Nurse Green Eyes was seated at the end of the gurney with the instrument in her hand. "Okay, I want you to lift your knees and pull up your gown," she ordered sternly. Nurse Green Eyes had suddenly become the female version of Christian Grey. That's when the unspeakable truth hit like a thunderclap. She was about to see a part of my anatomy that I had never actually seen with my own eyes. And go where no man has ever gone before. That's when she ordered me to relax as she began her long journey into my heart of darkness. There was just one problem. "You're tightening up," she scolded. "We're not into torture here, so I won't force my way in. Now relax. Pretend you're doing Lamaze. Breathe slowly in and release it in short bursts." I was fast falling out of love. So where do you work? Dr. Shaky suddenly chimed in. He wasn't fooling me. I knew he was just trying to distract me so Nurse Ratchet could insert her unspeakable shish kebab. The image on the high-def TV monitor leapt into life, displaying what looked for all the world what looked like the inside of a triangular pink cave, garishly lit with a probing spotlight sweeping to and fro. With a shock of horror, I realized the image was wobbling like a handheld camcorder at a drunken fraternity party. Now I'm gonna inflate your colon with compressed air, so we better get a better look, Dr. Shaky announced. It may feel like you have to go to the bathroom, but I assure you there's nothing in there now. You're completely cleaned out. Almost immediately, I felt a rush of air from somewhere deep within me. And the doctor was right. It sure felt like I would soon get my revenge on Nurse Green Eyes. But I didn't. And the journey continued. With the good doctor conducting a travelogue on my lower GI tract, he was a man who clearly relished his work. Abruptly, the tour came to a halt, and he became quiet. I see a couple of very small polyps, he announced. I'm gonna burn them off. What appeared to be a soldering iron came into view on the screen. It touched a small pinkish-looking nodule on the screen, and a wisp of smoke rose up. Oh my God, would I soon be blowing smoke rings at Nurse Green Eyes? If so, she gave no indication. Her eyes remained fixed on the part of me that was her direct responsibility. So how far are we up now? I hissed through clenched jaws. Almost to the end, about 6 feet, Dr. Shaky replied. Wow, 6 feet. I was secretly proud of myself. Why? I'm not sure. Done, Dr. Shaky announced. Just the two small polyps. Nothing major. You're good to go. Almost immediately, I felt the snake retreating as Nurse Green Eyes reeled in her instrument. I had survived. No, I had conquered. The last time I saw Nurse Green Eyes, we were back in the recovery room with all the wimps who were groggily coming out of their chemically induced stupor. She poked her head through the curtain and announced that I could leave, but only after I passed gas. Then she asked me what kind of juice and cookie I wanted. My heart skipped a beat again. With that, she was out of my life forever. Not so Dr. Shaky. He came into the recovery room with a clipboard held by a single trembling hand. He looked at me quizzically and asked, "Hi, I'm the doctor. I'll be doing your colonoscopy today." Say, you look familiar. Have we met before? I thought about rolling over so we could reacquaint ourselves. But I just left as fast as I could. The end, pun intended.
Klamer is a native of St. Louis, Missouri, where he was a newspaper reporter and a columnist before moving to Chicago and working as a writer at advertising agencies for 10 years. Today, he lives in Little Rock and writes and blogs for Dillard's Department Store's e-commerce website. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? Thank you. Thank you to all of our writers. Thank you to our live audience. And thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company. And our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Additional support provided by William F. Lehman Public Library, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, YouTube, and Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
Writer accommodations provided by Robin Wood Bed and Breakfast. More at robinwoodbnb.com. Experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. Schedule and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week, either on this station or at Starving Artist Cafe, for another edition of Tales from the South.